Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. And today with me is my good friend, Lieutenant George Corbin. We're both retired guys. George served in the city of Asbury Park, and he's here with me today. And we have a whole host of things to talk about in reference to law enforcement. Now, you know, law enforcement is near and dear to my heart. I spent over 35 years teaching, training in law enforcement as a law enforcement officer. And George and I are working hard to try and do what we can to help our communities and law enforcement and our families and everybody get along. So first of all, George, welcome aboard.
Oh, thank you, Joe. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm glad you're here. We spent a lot of time talking over the winter, and then we kind of got caught up in our lives. But one of the things that George and I are working on is a program that we think the country's law enforcement officers and the citizens of every community really need. Is a program we're calling Policing Diverse Communities. Now, when we talked about it, this is not one of those touchy-feely, everybody get along kind of thing. This is going to be a realistic program for law enforcement officers for us to figure out what is it we can do to help bring the communities back to law enforcement back to the communities, and heal these horrible things that are going on right now. So, George, just how do you see this whole thing going on? What do you see in this defund the police and anti-police? What's this all about?
Well, we try to avoid being political, and we practice being apolitical, but we've been drawn in to politics, or parlor tricks, I call it. And the media didn't do a very good job of promoting the police. Just go back to 9/11, for instance, where the police were the heroes. Everybody had NYPD baseball caps. But over the years, the police to be, I guess, the greater agenda on their part. But they demoralized. They kind of took the wind out of our sails over the years, allowing certain circumstances to happen that happened with a few of our officers, and blanket us with a defund the police, ride-alongs with social workers or something. And in the meantime, crime went out of control during this time period as we were being demoralized. And we kind of like lost our way a little bit. How do we service and continue to serve our communities when they are totally against us based on what the media's portrayal of the police are?
Now that's what I'm looking at. And I'm saying to myself, are our communities really against us? Or is that what the media is portraying? I mean, every community has people that want to live their lives, be left alone, live safe and secure. I mean, you see these stories of a kid, like I just read it this morning on the news, a six-year-old boy sleeping in bed. There was a drive-by shooting outside. He got shot and killed, sleeping in his bed. Yeah. And that mother was in the next room, has to deal with that now. That whole community just lost that little baby. And you're right, crime right now is out of control. And it is partly the media conflagration about law enforcement. And you mentioned it, how they paint with a broad brush on law enforcement. Some bad incidents. We all know there's been bad incidents. There's been mistakes. There's been purposeful things. But the overwhelming majority of law enforcement people, the men and women are out there doing the right thing every single day. They're good people. Our problem in our business is that there's violence in our business, right?
Yeah.
We're not plumbers. We're dealing with people who are angry. It's not pretty. They don't always want to be arrested. They don't want to be held to account, and they fight. They attack, and we have to fight back. But when I look at this and I say, that's the question to you. Do you really think our communities really don't want the police around, or are they kind of caught up in this whole moment?
Right now, they need us. They might not necessarily be a want, but they need us to patrol, to reduce crime, but we need their help too. We've kind of got away with it's us versus them right now. But if we can bridge that gap and create a small army of law-abiding citizens or to champion the law-abiding citizens, there's some of those, might be a little older, that really believe in truth, justice, American way, and believe in their law enforcement officers. But there's an underpinning of those who drank the Kool-Aid of the media that all the police are bad and that they don't have to follow our directions. I am so, a lot of the police-related shootings are those who have not followed the directions of the officers. It happened to me, it happened to you, when they didn't follow our directives. But it's how we approach them. And yes, force was used. We had to use a respective force in order to effect the arrest. And it's not pretty.
No, and that's a good point. An arrest of someone who's resisting is not a pretty sight. Nobody wants to see it, you know, especially if somebody's using a PR-24 or a nightstick. And, you know, you're not bashing people over the heads. We're trained how to use that to do a compliance strike, so that the guy or the girl realize, hey, this hurts. I should just give up. That's what the pepper spray is. It's supposed to disable them so that they give up the fight. We don't usually start the fight. We don't just walk up to somebody and start punching them in the face to lock them up.
No.
We start out with, hey, you're under arrest. And they pull away. They fight. I'm not under arrest. They start attacking. And then we have to respond. And that is not pretty. It's an ugly thing. And that's what I'm talking about. Our business involves that. But George, yeah, who put us here? Are you and I, you just rogue guys, we decided to get guns and badges, right, and run around our community and do that? Or were we appointed by the people who demand that there be laws and law enforcement? Isn't that correct?
That's absolutely correct. And that's what people ultimately want. They want justice and they want to live their lives in peace and somewhat harmony within their communities. But unfortunately, based on societal problems that invade every household, it's not as pretty and pristine as they want it to be. So they actually look to the police to provide that. Ultimately, they did a survey, I think I sent that to you, that ultimately the majority of people want the police around. They want to be safe in their own homes. Unfortunately, it's not always the case. And we're the ones who ultimately have to respond. So our response is very important.
It is. And without us, we see what happens. We see what happens when, you know, the whole Ferguson effect takes place. When officers start to say, I'm starting to see it in social media memes and stuff. You're starting to see now where they're going, hey, should I answer this call or should I get indicted? Should I just drive on by as though I didn't see it? Where was it, in Seattle or Portland the other day? You had Antifa and the Proud Boys going at it with each other, and the cops were standing by watching. They did not get involved. Is that what we want in our society?
No, that's analysis paralysis. Unfortunately, they want to tie you. Damned if you do, damned if you don't. There's got to be a way that we can champion those guys who put on that badge and carry that gun, to champion them. They're the only ones that will prevent total anarchy in this country, the law enforcement officers. Yeah, we're demonized right now, but ultimately, I'm so happy to see officers saving choking babies, performing CPR on those who, and they don't give a shit. They run right in and to save lives. That's what law enforcement does. We've been demonized. So we're damned if we do, damned if we don't. But just look at the numbers of officers that are actually applying for police officer jobs. It's dwindling down to zero in there.
When we look at New Jersey State Police, one of the, you know, vaunted agencies of law enforcement, they usually have like 18,000 people apply. And I think the last class that they ran, they had less than 5,000 apply.
Yeah.
that's a bellwether. All these communities. I was talking to somebody, who was it, from Neptune PD. You know, you and I are both familiar with them here in New Jersey.
Yeah.
I was talking to their lieutenant. I said, hey, you know, he said, hey, we're hiring 8 cops. If you know anybody that wants to be a cop, have them apply, because we can't get anybody to apply. Now, here was a great job, a great career, and people are now going, either number one, young people are saying, hey, the cops are bad, I don't want to be that, or they're saying, why would I go somewhere where I'm going to get arrested and go to jail for doing the job I'm demanded to do? You know, it is damned if we do and damned if we don't.
And it's been festering for a long time, since the crime bill of 1994, signed, of course, by our now president, Senator Biden. But it was, we locked up everybody for everything. And unfortunately, over the years, we thought we could arrest our way out of the problems. But the key now in law enforcement is to join forces with the law-abiding community to create a small army of those that will call us, that will alert us to different issues before it festers out of control. So we have to bond with the community again. They're afraid to talk to us. They're afraid to have us come to their homes. So we must provide a nurturing, neutral environment that they can come meet with us, not necessarily at a police headquarters. I'm thinking maybe churches can be utilized, as well as schools. Churches are inherently neutral locations. And in Asbury, that's what we did during the height of the crack epidemic, was we met with the law-abiding citizens at the churches, which was neutral, where they could voice those who were of criminal intent. They never showed up. So we had a bond with the law-abiding citizenry, which to this day, I'm getting the accolades and, you know, all the responses still being called to come into the community regarding, but Asbury Park over the years have, of course, changed. And the more law-abiding citizens, they outnumber the criminal element, but they're also going to wind up being victimized.
Right. Now, you know, when you were saying 2 points that I wanted to get back to, and as we keep going on here, I get distracted because there's so much to
talk about. Yeah, no, so much information.
When you said, you know, painting the police with a broad brush. Now, I'm an Italian guy. Would you say all Italian guys are in the mafia? No, of course you wouldn't. So when you see one or two cops do something bad or rogue, does that mean all the cops are that? Of course it doesn't. But that's not the message we hear from the media. We hear that really.
Right.
You and I would get together with our other cops at the start of the day, say, okay, who are we going to go get today, George? Who do we want to go get? Let's go after these guys. People really think that police do that.
And no, we would rather drink our coffee and relax and park on the side of the road somewhere with less calls for service. What the call for service, going back to that point, that's where we react to a crime in progress or something where the police are needed.
Right.
What we're going to see, though, thanks to today's climate, is less proactivity.
Yes.
Less guys going out there stopping cars. We can't arrest anybody with the marijuana joint in their car or in their person anymore. There's some things happening politically that I don't like at all. Right. So we got to stand alone, and we are alone in this in law enforcement. But we got to stick together more so than we ever have. Before we have to keep the motivation going to get up, to get out of that bed, to put on a gun and a badge and go out there and do the best you can. We got to champion those. We talked about this in the past. We got to champion those officers that want to do good.
Yep. The blue heroes in America, you know, the men and women of law enforcement, corrections that go out every single day to make our society better. And you know, it's funny because I know myself, I took on the police job because I got sick and tired of yelling at the TV and screaming at what was wrong. And my wife says, instead of screaming at the TV, why don't you go find a way to do something about it? And I did it through law enforcement. And when you talk about, that's the idealism of law enforcement. No matter where people serve, in corrections, police work, it doesn't matter. They want to do the right thing for the community. And when you see that the tools that we have, which we're not allowed to use anymore, the whole idea was that if you went into an area and you enforced the laws that are on the books in an area, people got the idea that the police were there and you couldn't do illegal things. You couldn't break into people's stuff. You couldn't actually assault people because the cops were here. You're going to get in trouble. And it made an area safer. So you might say that's kind of like a pacification. We would go in and go, hey, here's the cops. We're doing our job. Everybody just get along and live your life. Don't be victimizing people. But when you say calls for service, that's really, George, that's one of the crux that I don't think people understand. I was trying to get to that before. We don't just get together and decide to go into an area. Why are the officers sent into a particular, why do some communities have more law enforcement attention than others? What is the real bottom line? Why are they there?
So-called to reduce the crime in those respective areas, but you almost have to be invited in. We have become occupying, I know in Asbury, on the west side of our city, predominantly Black, Hispanic, poor. We weren't invited in. We were almost like an occupational force. But it's not what we did, it's how we did to engage in the community at large. Being an officer of color, I was sent to that side pretty much by myself. So I had to engage them as allies, and it's how we spoke to them, how we dealt with them. Yeah, you're going to better carry a couple dollars in your pocket, too, because they were either hungry or they wanted to buy more crack. But I was able to, create a small army amongst the people on that west side. The old folks that were scared, shut in. Some of the churches that their numbers of the congregation declined because people were afraid to go over to church, the law-abiding citizens. So we had to, our work cut out for us, but it's not what we did, it's how we did it.
And I think you're absolutely right about that. And I guess my bigger point was, is the cops go where the crime is.
Yes. Right?
Cops go where the crime is. We don't just decide to pick on a particular neighborhood. It's because there's crime. Those people are in their homes being victimized. They are American citizens. They deserve to live their life as free American citizens without worried about getting hit over the head, their purse being stolen, getting shot on the street. And that's why the cops go there. But you're right. It's how we do that work. And this is where you touched on a point before. You know, you didn't say the word reform, and that's the big talk out there right now. But let's look at one of the political things that happened, probably for a good idea, but it really went sideways. This whole thing of getting rid of bail. Now, I have said on my shows many times that I get it. If I'm driving with a suspended license or I have a $300 warrant and I get pulled over and I get arrested, I'll post the $300 and I'll get out. But a poor person, no matter their race, gets pulled over. They don't have $300. They might sit in a county jail for 3 weeks.
Yep.
How is that fair? That's not fair. So I get it for low level things like that. Get them in, document them,
exactly. And then get them out.
But anything violent, the bail should be very high because we find that those people are recidivists that we keep letting out. How about the bank robber in New York? He robs a bank. They let him out with no bail. He robs two more banks. They let him out. He robs three more banks. Somebody's going to get hurt in one of those robberies. And if that guy was incarcerated waiting for his trial or whatever, it would have been five less bank robberies, five less opportunities for people to get hurt. Yeah. And that goes all through the whole system. You know, violent people cannot be allowed to continue to be violent.
And they, as a school cop for, you know, Neptune town over for 4 years, it was an 18-year-old student that took a swing at me. I forgot where I was, who I was, so I was able to, subdue him and arrest him. He was out before my paperwork was done, thanks to so-called bail reform. It's something we got to review also. I mean, I'm talking about our politicians. They review that bail reform very, very closely.
Which is, it's interesting that the whole bail reform idea was that it's not fair. And they will say it's not fair to people of color. I'm going to say it's not fair to people who don't have money, right?
Right.
That could be poor white folks, just like it can be poor
black. Yep, exactly.
If you don't got money, you're not getting out of jail. And depending on what you did, you have to be held account for what you do. But to sit and stew in the county jail for 2 weeks when a guy like me or you would post the money and we would get out, I get that. That's inherently not right. So it's really not a color thing. It's more of a socioeconomic kind of a thing. But anything violent, we have to pay attention. You look at Rudy Giuliani, what he did back in the day in New York, the broken windows theory.
Yes.
He went after small things and you held people account for that. The bigger things wouldn't happen or they're in the system. Now, today, that's considered, oh, no, you're picking on people. No, you have to stop people from committing crime. Then it's not a right to commit crime. You can't just go because that's what you want to do. Because how's that fair to the rest of us? How is that fair, like you're saying, to the people on the west side, the good and decent people on the west side of Asbury Park that can't come out of their house? How is that fair to them? It's not fair. And that's where we need to
I don't think they were taken into consideration. Or the fact that some of those who were committing crimes are on drugs of their drug of choice. And then so a 2 weeks dry out period, offer them some social workers or social work or mental counseling on the way out the door and offer them that, especially if it's a drug related problem, why they're committing. But to lock them up and then do all the paperwork and they're out before the paperwork is even dried, ink is dried on the paperwork, then there's definitely something wrong. But we're seeing this. We are the foundation of this country, officers, law officers, and law enforcement as a whole. We're it. Yeah, we're the uniform where you can spot us. Yeah, we represent the government, but we also represent the people. We are the community, and the community are the police.
Yes.
And they're going to go for the hiring from within the police, the community you serve or you live in. But we'll see how that turns
that's
out.
That's going to go, because we know in some places it's hard to find candidates that they might be qualified, but they don't want to do the job. And if they want to do the job, they might not be qualified. So it's very, very hard to always do that in every community. But that is something that our program, and I want everyone to take a note out there, wherever you're listening to this, you know, policing diverse communities. Lieutenant Joe and Lieutenant George are putting this program together, and we're going to talk more and more about it as we go forward. We're going to be offering this through, my company, True Security Design, Pangaro Training. We do remote training now. Everything's online. We also do it live. And we have the police subscription, where you can come on and buy a subscription for $2,000, George. Every cop in the department gets a sign in, whether you got one cop or 1,000. And this program is part of that.
I love that because some of the courses I've taken over the years, and I've taken many, some of them were like $500 a piece. And it was select few individuals. But what you're doing is so fantastic because anybody within the department that wants to sign on can sign on and receive that training.
Right. For one price for a whole department. And you're right. I was the training officer in my agency, and I didn't have money to send everybody to everything they should have went. Because like you said, these courses can be $200, $500, $800 for one person.
They were moneymakers for those who I went to FBI courses. I went to Northwestern University courses. I went to D.C. during the community policing to go get the grants, cops programs, overnight hotel stays.
Sure. And that's what we're trying to overcome with this.
California.
Yeah. You know, with that subscription now, a department, what we're letting, you know, smaller departments. I spoke to a lot of people in upstate New York and Pennsylvania, and they got 7-8-man departments. And for them, 2,000 might be a lot. So I said, listen, get together with 3 departments in your area that have 8 to 10 guys, chip in, and we'll call you a regional police. And for that same 2,000, everybody in those 3 towns can sign up and get the training, right? We're trying to make it affordable. But this program is really what I want to talk about, policing diverse communities. is going to be our attempt to follow guidelines that are coming out, to look at reform, and look at ways that you and I know down in the street how to actually make this happen. Because we have to heal this. We have to heal this wound, because this out of control crime is just going to continue. And what I want to talk about before we take our first break here is, when we talk about out of control crime, there's still an element in our society that we can't speak the truth. You can't talk about crime because it'll offend somebody or it'll upset somebody. Look at the city of Chicago. And when we were talking, we just lost that wonderful young officer, Ella French, was killed. Yeah. Her father is hanging on for his life in a shooting. And they arrested two brothers who went out and did this and killed this young woman. Chicago is out of control. I mean, eight to 10 to 15 people killed every, and most of them are people of color who are getting killed by other people of color.
Yeah.
And you don't have to talk about it. You can't talk about it.
I hear anything from Black Lives Matter or any of those talking heads, I call them, about the issues of the shootings, the gang-related people of color.
Right, and that's what I'm talking about. We're not allowed to talk about that because that's politically incorrect. We have to ignore that reality. But I say the same thing when you were talking about the people on the West Side. These are American citizens that deserve to live their lives without getting shot and killed in the street. And Chicago's a perfect example. I don't see Black Americans or white Americans. Those are Americans, and they shouldn't live like that.
And those are Americans attempting to protect them. They're called police officers. And my God, to give their lives to protect Americans, ultimate sacrifice. I know some officers saying, is it worth it?
Of course. You leave your house. When you and I did our job back in the day, we would go to work knowing that getting killed in the line of duty was a potential. But we also knew that there was kind of some unwritten rules out there. You know, it was one of those things that the things were farther and fewer in between. But you didn't sit and eat your sandwich and get shot in the head, like just happened in another one of our beautiful states. Yeah. Young guy sitting there on an off-duty detail eating a sandwich, and he's ambushed. This happens all the time now. This is not a one-off. I mean, we're under attack as law enforcement.
We are under attack. Here in America, the law enforcement officers, but we're going to have to work smarter. People don't respect the badge or the fact that we have a gun because I guess they've got guns.
They've got guns.
So yeah, they've
got. And they don't have rules like we have rules of engagement. They don't have rules
now. And shoot, don't shoot. I mean, it's coming down to that. I mean. Simple motor vehicle stops. What do? We stop making motor vehicle stops.
Well, see, that seems to be the underlining. And I got to tell you, a friend of mine named Jim, who's a law-abiding guy, loves the cops. He's very pro-American guy. He says to me all the time, listen, what are you guys doing out there writing all these tickets? It's raising revenue for the towns, but it turns the citizens against you. He goes, so I get stopped because I got a cracked windshield. I know I got a cracked windshield. I got to go get it replaced for $500. I'm doing it next week. But in the meantime, here's a $200 ticket for having that. That just turned that good citizen against you. Yes. And I'm not saying that traffic tickets aren't needed. But again, just like bail reform, maybe we look at those as warnings. Hey, listen, and major violations like drunk driving and reckless driving, those we ticket.
Yeah,
I don't know. Maybe that's part of the answer.
I don't know. But I know it's not what we do, it's how we do our job also. It's how we do our job. And that's the key. So hopefully we're going to get together and come up with some strategies on engaging the respective communities and marrying them back up with law enforcement, local, county, state, even federal. We're going to have to reevaluate what it means to be a law enforcement officer. And we all gonna have to work together, create a small army. And the politicians, all right.
Okay. You're gonna have to get them on board too.
No, that's ongoing. And we need them for funding. Yes. And that's going to need federally also. I'm thinking how federally we got a Asbury. I was the grant writer. Okay.
I don't want to cut you off, George, but we have to take our break. We're up against the clock right here. We'll be back in a minute. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back with Lieutenant Joe and Lieutenant George Court. Stand by.
Because of COVID-19, the average American worries about their immune health 4 times a day. That's 112 times per year. To minimize the worries, leading nutritional supplement company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost, an immune supplement that contains 15 full doses of science-backed nutrients like vitamin C, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea, all in a one-a-day pill-free gel pack. It tastes great, is convenient on the go, and it's more natural too, without chemical binders, fillers, and coatings. Supporting a strong and resilient immune system can be simple. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Immune Super Boost. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
AmericaOutLoud.com is the alternative from the agenda-driven globalist. Here, we take on the challenges of our generation so that we can preserve future generations. On-demand podcast or real-time talk radio with our streaming apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Everybody, welcome back to Chasing Justice. Hey, George, let me ask you a question. Are you trying to stay healthy these days?
Well, I actually am. I'm down to my high school weight because I watch what I eat. My youngest son, Georgie, he actually came back a vegan from Temple University, and the whole household's been transformed. I'm down to high school weight because I'm eating less meat, more veggies. I take zinc, vitamin C, the real vitamin C, not ascorbic acid. That's fake. Drinking Essentia, which is alkaline water. Drinking that. And taking some vitamin and mineral supplements.
You're being proactive, right? And that's what I want to say is that I came across this stuff here. You can see this here. This is called Healthy Cell. Healthy Cell makes this. This is Immune Boost, right? And they come in these, it's really cool. They come in these little packages, right? It's a liquid.
Wow.
Immune Super Boost by Healthy Cell. And I got turned on to these. They were on the AmericaOutLoud.com radio show advertising. And I saw it and I said, you know, my family here, we're trying to stay healthy, stay ahead of the pandemic.
Yeah.
And all that sense. So I ordered some of this and I started taking it and I really like it. And like I said, it comes in this, it's, I think it's black cherry, and I've been feeling great taking it. So I'm going to take it right here in front of you. Watch this. You just go like
this. And it doesn't wind up in your intestinal tract if it's a pill. That's the beauty of that. And is it easily and instantly absorbable, right?
Yeah, it's immediately. And it's excellent. And I've been taking it for a while, and I got to tell you, I really do feel better. I have to write to these people and tell them that this actually works.
There's a whole list of you,
And they also make one.
Become a distributor.
Well, I don't know if I'm going to be a distributor. I like it, and I like to tell people when it works for me. But they also have one for sleeping at night that helps you to sleep. Now, I sleep pretty good, but they got one for sleeping, and I think I'm going to, my brother has a little trouble sleeping. I think I'm going to turn him on to it and see how he does with it, but. The Healthy Cell Immune Boost, really very good. Yeah. I just wanted to mention that. Now, listen.
Yeah, cool.
We talked a little bit about the whole defund the police thing. And like you said, we don't want to be political about things, but I don't think we can avoid that right now. We've been categorized on one side of the world, and we're on the outs right now, law enforcement. Law enforcement is part of the I don't know, the evil system, the bad system. And the way I've expressed it, and I'll get your opinion, see if you think I'm right. As people in our country, as citizens, we want to live a healthy, safe life for our families. We want to reach our goals. We want to achieve whatever God allows us to achieve in life. We all have different talents and abilities. And there is a part of humanity that's always going to do the wrong thing, going to hurt people, steal from people, be bad, be evil. Evil is real. It's out there. So as a citizens, we've demanded of our legislature, our people that represent us in our governments, local, state, federal, that kind of thing, we've demanded from them that they create laws that will maintain safety and security, that will keep us all follow the rules and everyone interact and then go about your lives in a great time. And then once we demanded that we have those laws in place to protect everyone, now someone has to go and enforce them. So we hired law enforcement officers. We trained them to go out and now enforce the laws that we, the people, have demanded be put in place. So we are not a rogue enterprise. We are, like you said earlier, it was perfect. You said, we are the people. The people are the police. We're out there doing what we all demand. When I come out of my house at 2 o'clock in the morning, for whatever reason, I come out of my house, I want to be able to walk up the street, have a cigar, walk my dog, do whatever I want to do without getting beat over the head. That's what everybody wants. I want to raise my family in a place where they can feel comfortable and they can enjoy themselves. My son is going to, he's 18, going off to college. He's going down to Baltimore. A little concerned about Baltimore.
Yeah, I know.
I have a cousin down there who's a cop down there. He's a young guy. He's been on the job about 4 or 5 years in Baltimore. Eric Pangaro. He's an awesome young man. And it was interesting. I was talking to him, telling him, hey, Jack, my son Jack's going down to college down there in Baltimore. You know, I want to give him your name and your number. He goes, yeah, man, of course. If he has any problems, whatever, he can call me. I'll help him out. He can come to my house if he needs anything. And here's what was funny. Here's where you see this mindset that I wasn't really ready for. He goes, and if he gets victimized, let me know, and I'll make sure that the cops in the precinct do the right thing. I'm saying, oh my God, this is the way we think about things now. Who's going to get victimized?
Isn't that something? Yeah.
But he's going to Philadelphia today to go see a baseball game. And we have lists of things to do and not to do when you're going into Philadelphia. Any of our cities now, you got to be so careful.
All the major cities. And we got to look at the politics of those cities and their relationship to their local law enforcement. Do they back them, or are they just drinking the Kool-Aid that the media is portraying officers for an extra vote, I guess, maybe? But Reagan talked about the trickle-down theory back in the 80s, that everything would trickle down, and he was so right with that. And the portrayal of police officers, law enforcement across the country, it trickled down from their respective cities, from the local politicians, it trickled down to the people who drank the Kool-Aid also and are against the law enforcement. And they're, for an extra vote, they would sell our law enforcement out.
Well, they have. And I'm saying to myself, does that really work in every community? I mean, does that really drive people to the polls to say, yeah, we hate the cops, let's get rid of them. We don't need these. Is that really going to push somebody to go to the polls and push a lever for somebody? I guess it does work. Or why would they do it? They wouldn't. You know,
in today's climate, unfortunately, that would do it because of a few videos of unfortunate police involved incidents.
Sure.
But these guys I'm seeing every day, these guys are like saving babies. They're responding to these shootings. Right. They're performing CPR on the shooting victims, no matter what color they are. They are Americans. They're going into having, unfortunately, still doing their job, pulling over cars with results, or even domestic violence incidents where officers were shot upon their arrival. I mean, my God.
You're absolutely right, and that's one of the things I wanted to ask. I wanted to talk a little about the state of policing in America, but you just brought up getting shot in the domestic. Now, as part of our subscription, we do these podcasts where, maybe people like you, people like other officers we know come on and talk about important things just as an extra addition to the subscription. So it gives our subscribers more information, more law enforcement knowledge and whatnot. And I recently did a thing about arriving at domestics. And as a veteran cop yourself, here's what I said. You know, we go racing up to these scenes because we want to protect people. Domestic violence, we never used to take it real serious. Now we take it very serious. We understand.
Oh, yeah.
We have evolved, right? When I first came on, there was a whole idea of, you know, domestics were a family matter. And if you'd show up and somebody was all beat to hell and they didn't want to sign a complaint, you said, okay, everybody behave, and you left.
And that's it.
Now we've realized that a lot of those people are victimized and they can't do anything to help themselves. So we make arrests now, mandatory in every state. Now you go somewhere that's domestic, you see violence, you arrest somebody. But the approach to these domestics, we do see officers get killed when they're riding up to a domestic. So what I've suggested was you want to consider, you know, sergeants and lieutenants when you're doing your briefings. As the cops are rolling up, as they almost get to that, maybe you want to turn the lights and sirens off so they don't give a clue to the bad guys and bad girls that were coming.
Yeah.
So then you get out of your car, like at the house next door, and you look around, make sure there's not a rifle sticking out the window, where they do shoot our cops right in the head, walking up to the door.
Yes.
And
exactly.
At the door. When you're at the door, don't stand right in front of the door because they'll shoot through the door. So as your opinion as a veteran officer, you know, where do you see on that? I think I'm on the right spot there.
You're exactly correct. And it's the approach to the house in question. Next door, you don't have to ride right in front with the lights and sirens and walk right up to the door and ring the doorbell standing in front of the door. It's going to be the approach. Several approaches. You go around, you know, parking up the street even, and going around the house unnoticed, and just peeking inside or whatever you have to do. Very good training that should be done in that regard.
Right. And of course, I know there's a bunch of our brothers and sisters out there that are listening, going, absolutely not. Somebody's getting beat up. You got to run right in the door. And you know what? Maybe if that's the call that comes in, you have to judge it. What I'm saying is give it some thought as you're rolling up. Not necessarily you have to park far away, but you want to think cops get killed doing that, walking up during a domestic, which is.
Yeah. And your adrenaline is going as you get the call over your police radio. Your adrenaline gets going, and sometimes it cuts off. You're in survival mode or you're in a go get 'em mode. You got to kind of like you think your way through it. That adrenaline will make you roll right up and crash the car right through the front door.
Right.
No, up the street and approach it. And officers really have to really back each other up. There should be some way that you can have a two-man car. No more single officers riding around. It's got to be a way. I know financially, because they want to defund the police, you don't have the manpower where you can have. But the ideal situation is a two-man car approaching everything. Of course,
right. Then you got
automatic backup. I'll put it that way.
The problem is you would have, and again, we're talking about, you know, changing how we do our job. We're doing it the way we've always done it. Maybe what we have to do is, I know a lot of police chiefs, especially. Well, I'd say any police department, they're concerned about their response time. But maybe we have to stack non-emergent calls. And it's one of those things where you have a two-person car, guy and a girl, two girls, two guys, whatever you put in, partners in the car, and they respond. And when they're done with the serious call, then they can go to the non-emergent thing. And this way you can use your manpower more appropriately. It's a way of rethinking what we do and how we do things in law enforcement. And I think that's what this whole thing may lead to some good eventually, in that we reconsider what we have our cops do. We have them, like right now, you know, in your community of mine, and in most PDs, I think, we were the dumping ground for everything. If people couldn't figure out what to do,
the social, call police. social ills, you name it, the 1037s,
mental cases,
psychos, mental case. Yeah, that's I'm trying to be politically correct. The mental case and things like that. We were the dumping ground of societal ills. We were the cleanup people. We were looked upon as the saviors of society. No, we need society to start stepping up also.
Right. So maybe maybe there's where we can do something. Where I see a lot of these places now saying that cops shouldn't respond to a mental case. Maybe the social workers should go. In your experience, how many times have you showed up on a call of a mental case or a 1037, as it's called here in New Jersey, and that person was violent or had a weapon? How many times that happened to you?
Almost all the 1037 cases, because it became politically, Asbury Park and some of the local towns, your town of Ocean, it became the hotels, motels, they became dumping grounds. As they try to save a buck or two in a mental institution, they dump them into our community. And some were violent. Some were violent and off their meds. Off their meds, they were off to the races. So we had to, you know, some of us got hurt. Some of us had to use our force to overcome theirs. And it wasn't pretty. And it's never pretty. Right. Our forces that we use to overcome the force used against us, never pretty. Now it's just on video. It's video now. That's only only difference now.
Now, that's interesting when you mention the video. And you're right. And I guess my question would be, they're talking about, well, they'll have civilians respond to those kind of calls. And I'm saying that's going to be good until the first civilian gets a knife in the neck or gets shot in the head. And they'll say, well, where were the cops? Well, you don't want us to go to those things anymore because, you know, we cause these problems. We don't. You get people are being violent. That's the truth. And the bottom line is that, yes, okay, you have to say it to be politically correct. There are some cops that do a bad thing. They are so small in number, it's absurd. I even hate having to say it. But
it's
an absurdly small number that they make a bad judgment. They do things wrong or they're just bad people. It happens. Every profession has it. But ours is very, very small. What normally happens is, like you said very early on in our conversation today, police go to take some action and the citizen decides to amp up the confrontation. No, I'm not going to go with you. No, I'm not going to listen to you. I don't have to listen to you. Who the hell do you think you are? I have my rights. And people do have their rights. Our job is to defend their rights.
We do.
But they also have to comply. That's what our society has created. And if you don't comply, it forces the situation to the next level. Cops don't do that.
And we're seeing that they think they're actually supported in their assault on police officers, bail reform, societal. I'm talking about from politicians, parlor tricksters, whatever you want to call them. What they do is they send that message and everybody's getting it.
Right, messaging.
Everybody's getting that message that the police aren't shit. And that you can shit on them, you know, that has to change. It's going to have to change through the media. The media right now is not a friend. Even those stupid cop shows I see on TV where they're actually, the cops are the bad guys on those freaking cop shows.
Well, I read articles about that where people were complaining and you saw how many they took the little kid Paw Patrol off because it's too pro police. You know, you got to show people who really are as brutal, hating people. And if you don't do that, you're not portraying that. And that is messaging. And that messaging is what's dangerous. Now, what we have seen throughout history is that when people want to change things, you have to first control the language. You have to control the messaging. And if you tell a lie enough times, it becomes the truth.
People, yeah, exactly.
And law enforcement, breaking down law enforcement. You know, I wonder the state of policing in America. Do you think that any of this that's going on would be by design to attack the police so that they back off, let the crime go out of control so that someone can then step in and have to do something else? Do you think there's anything to that?
I think so. I think, and we've seen it where a problem is created and then suddenly they come up with a so-called solution. So stand by on that because something is coming down the pipe. And officers, law enforcement, we have to protect each other. We're it. There's no other agency or don't expect from even the government or the politicians to protect us. We have to protect our own. Yes, we have to weed out some of the bad guys, bad cops, but we have to protect our own through training, extra training, more training, and on how to deal with all sorts of situations. It's going to have to be some role playing that I think you do, Joe. It's going to have to be some role playing, and so that if they've seen this before, a mental patient acting weird and crazed out, if they've seen it in a role, a safe environment, they probably would react even better in an actual situation. Sure. By muscle memory.
Right. You don't want anything. You don't want to have to do something for the first time that you've never thought about. And you've never practiced.
Right.
When you say we need to look out for each other, I think you're 100% right. But we also need all of those good citizens out there, the good and decent Americans, yes, that know what we're, yes, doing, of every community, that know why the cops are there. You know, we don't, I mean, another cliche statement I hate all the time is nobody hates a bad cop more than a good cop. Well, of course, that's true. That the reality is we need good citizens to stand up for us. Now, I saw a great example of this. It's a meme from Baltimore, of all places. There was a group of people, men and women from the community, who lined up in front of the police to protect them from a crowd that was coming at them. And they were citizens of the community. And they were like, no, you're not. The cops are here to do the right thing. And they were here to protect them. And I thought that was a great message from the community, of the decent people who were there in that community, that the cops are not bad. They're not your enemies. They're here to do the right thing. The criminals are the enemies. Those are the ones who cause the trouble, who rape your daughter, shoot your son in bed. Those are the bad people. The cops are here to protect us from that. And if we cooperate, if we get along, if we create a relationship like you're talking about, our neighborhoods will be safer and more secure. You know, I can't imagine going to bed every night in the city of Chicago with absolutely no power whatsoever to protect my family from what's happening every single day in that city. And we started talking about it before. So I'm gonna promote you now. You are now Chief George Corbin of the Chicago Police Department. Chief George Corbin, wow, of the Police Department. What is the first thing you do in the city of Chicago to turn around this violence? What do you think you would do?
A beer summit, maybe? I don't know.
Tough question.
I would really have to, yeah. I would definitely have to keep our men, their morale up. I would probably get a suggestion box going where the guys can make the suggestions, the ones who are out there on the street.
Right.
When the police have their meetings, it's usually sergeants and above, or none of the men who are out there in the crevice, none of them really have a voice. So I would give them a voice. Hey, guys, listen, how it would be servant leadership. What can we do? I would open up a suggestion box. And I would get some suggestions from the men and the women who are out there. What can we do? I wouldn't automatically, because of my leadership, I'm the chief, that I dictate to the men what to do. It would be from the bottom up. It'd be a reverse pyramid, mm-hmm, where I'm on the bottom and the men, I pull the men up on top. So, and the citizenry, duh. The citizenry forming a bond with them in a safe environment where they can tell us who the gangbangers are, where they meet, where's the guns, you might have to go revisit Cook County Jail and grab some of those guys and say, listen, what's up? You know, let us know. I wouldn't pretend, and I feel bad for those chiefs who get in front of the crowd and say, my thoughts and my prayers are with the fallen officers. That's right off the bat from me.
Well, here's now I'll promote myself. We're co-chiefs. I think we've talked about it today. Messaging is extremely important. And I'm going to reach back to both our experiences here in Monmouth County when Asbury Park was out of control with the crack epidemic and Prosecutor John Kay was being asked to do something by the citizens. And he went there and had a big meeting with all the community members, the religious members, and said, we're going to come in here. We're going to clean this up, but it's not going to be pretty. We're going to come in and we're going to arrest everybody who does something wrong. We're not going to let our officers get hurt, and we're going to make your streets safe. And that was the start of the Jump Out Boys. And I was lucky enough to be a part of that for some of their adventures.
Yeah, I remember those days.
You come out and clap when you're chasing people down on the street where the open air drug marketing was. Yeah. You're arresting them. And the complaints went way down because people had a voice in it and said, we don't want this here. Come and do your job. Now, of course, you had to do it properly. But there was not an effort there. So I would send the messaging out to the community that, hey, guess what? There's a new sheriff in town. And as of tomorrow, crime will not be tolerated. And I would send my troops out in there and I would make sure I got together with that community, like you're saying. And I would say, here's how we do police work. If you want your neighborhoods cleaned up, we're going to have to come in and take some action here. Because people shooting people on the street day and night, 20 people dead every single week is just, it's more than atrocious. It's something I can't even imagine we allow to go on in our country.
Right. And I like that too, because in other words, going back to engaging the community in their own rescue,
right?
In their own rescue. Is engaging them unless they want to see more children. And that's lately, it's been children who've been dying.
Unbelievable.
From those stray bullets. Unreal.
How is that?
I know it.
What is that all about? I mean, how does that poor mother have to deal with that? That community has to deal with that. And why? Why do people feel they can run around? Because you know what? The messaging has come from the political element that it's okay to do that. It's okay. We're not going to command you. We don't want to offend you. We don't want to cause a problem. The cops are bad. We know that. The whole idea that if the cops off, everyone will behave. I think we've kind of proved that that's not how it really works in life. Hey, this is Lieutenant Joe signing off. Hey, everybody, have a great day. And be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem.